5.
Aye.
Okay, first question is, how old were you when the war started in 1939?
In 1939, I was 17.
Okay.
I was at a CMTC camp up in Fort Riley, Citizen Military Training Camp.
Okay.
And I was up there and I heard that Germany had invaded Poland.
Okay.
And so I said, well, how long is it going to be before we get in this thing?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we was trying to stay out of it, you know.
Right. What did you, your relatives, or the community think of the war?
Oh, nobody liked it. Nobody liked the war. Man, we was going to, Roosevelt, everybody was going to keep us out of the war.
Mm-hmm.
Because when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, we was in the middle of it then.
Right. Could you explain the Civilian Military Training Corps? What was that and how did you join it?
Well, I was 17 and I'd heard that they had this, you know, and you got $30 for going up there, you know, and so I went up there, you know, I got hitchhiked up there. And I found out it was a cavalry.
Oh.
It was cavalry. And so I got up there, and here this 2nd Cavalry come bringing all these horses out there for us both young kids to ride. And I says, good heavens, every one of them's ornery as all get out. Something's wrong with every one of those horses. So I says, well, something's wrong. So I looked around, you know, and so I got the biggest horse. I says, well, look at this horse. Boy, she's a big one. And name was Greta. She was a real tame horse. And the thing is, you go out there going, you know, and she took such big strides that I'd always be right up there, right by the captain. And the captain said, get back there, soldier, get back there.
did you hitchhike by yourself or did other?
Oh, by myself.
By yourself? And was it hard to hitchhike? No.
That's the only way I could go, you know, because, mm-hmm. man alive, I hitchhiked all over the countryside when I was a teenager there, and you wouldn't do it now, but everybody hitchhiked in those days.
Okay. So your training mainly was riding horses?
Well, at that time it was. Actually, I was trying to get there. I volunteered for the Coast Artillery, but that was all filled up or something, so mm-hmm. they sent me to Fort Riley. And so that's, I got in the cavalry. Oh, man.
How long were you there?
30 days.
30 days. And then
30
you,
days.
And then you came back home?
Yeah, 30 days. And that was in 39.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd heard about Hitler invading Poland at that time. So I probably was thinking about, well, we're going to do something here.
Okay.
And
now, were you already registered as you were 19 years old?
Well, yeah, I didn't register for the draft. I was there, but I was going up to Kansas City trying to get into the Naval Aviation. I would be a Navy pilot.
Okay.
But I didn't get to. I got flunked out. Then I went over and I was going to get to be a airplane pilot. But I had nose obstruction.
Uh-huh.
And they wouldn't take me as an Army pilot right then, so I went ahead and joined the Army Air Force Ground Department, be a mechanic, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then I went down to Shepherd Field, Wichita Falls, Texas, and I went in there and had my nose operated on.
Oh, okay.
So they operated on my nose and everything, you know, and then I passed my examinations. So then I went down to the San Antonio pre-flight school. Then we went up to Vernon, Texas. And flying school there. And I had a trainer there, a pilot, and I scared the heck out of him. I was finding little PT-19s around there, and I was up there with him, you know, and he come by a field there. And I seen this field. I said, oh man, that'd be a beautiful field if he shut that engine back off, you know, I could land there. Well, he got about maybe 500 yards beyond that, and they shut the engine off. Well, I just wheeled the old plane around there like that, and then like that, and then went down that old field, and boom. And he never said a word. So I said, okay. So I took off and went back, because he flunked me out then. Mm-hmm. Says I had too many dangerous tendencies to be a pilot, which of course it did. Mm-hmm. And I, in fact, he was real lucky. I was real lucky because all the guys that made it through were went over to England and flying B-24s. Of course, all I wanted to do was fly a fighter plane. I didn't want to fly no 24. That's what I was based on later on. Mm-hmm. I was on the 24. But so anyway, I come back and went to ground school. Then I didn't decide, I don't want to go to ground school. So I signed up to be a aero gunner, engineer gunner, you know. Mm-hmm. And went on to Tenderfield and flew around and learned how to gun, you know. Then we went on to Topeka and got our crew and went to Boise, Idaho and trained. And I had a dandy pilot. He was the same age as me. But boy, could he fly that plane.
Mm-hmm. Now, this would have been after Pearl Harbor.
Oh, sure, okay. Sure, sure. Well, what? Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll have to go back a ways then. I was, I had a job cleaning out the linseed oil mill office. And I was down there Sunday morning. And Mickey McDonald, that's the chemist guy, come in. And he says, the Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor. I looked at him and said, where's Pearl Harbor at? Mm-hmm. I didn't know where Pearl Harbor was. But anyway, I found out where Pearl Harbor was, and we was in war.
Now, where were you at that time? Where was the linseed oil plant?
That was in Fredonia, Kansas.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's your home.
That's my hometown.
All right.
And my dad got me the job cleaning up this linseed oil office. Mm-hmm. Office. And I'd go down there every Sunday morning and clean up. And this Sunday morning while I was down there, come this guy coming in and says, Japanese attack Pearl Harbor. Because I never had heard Pearl Harbor before.
Yeah. Now, did you think then that you were going to enlist or wait to be
well,
drafted?
I probably knew I was going to enlist because I would have got drafted about 2 or 3 months later. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to go where it would be in the Air Force. I didn't want to be in the infantry.
Right. And you thought if you enlisted, you had a choice.
That's right. You had a choice. So if I volunteered for the Army Grand Corps, well, then I was definitely in the Air Force.
Okay.
I didn't want to be in the slug it out on the ground with those dirty soldiers. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, we went on through and flunked out, of course, on my pilot training. Mm-hmm. And then I volunteered to be a area gunner engineer.
Okay.
And then they trained me, and we got our crews together at Salt Lake City there and went to Boise where we trained, and it was called the engineer gunner because I was flying. They had a little engine down there, and then you had to start if you're going to charge up your brakes and stuff if you're going to land. But then I was top gunner to fly the top turret. Mm-hmm. I also flew waist gunner sometimes, but anyway. Oh, I had a lot of experiences during the war.
Well, okay, we'll get to that.
Okay.
When you joined, did you go to Kansas City for the induction into?
No, I went to Kansas City trying to get in the Navy Air Corps.
Okay,
know.
But then when you got in the other,
I went to Fort Riley for that.
I see. Okay,
I went up to Fort Riley because they had a deal. They was gonna let you join the Air Force for pilots, and like I say, I flunked out there. Then I went ahead and joined because I said, shoot, fire, I'm in it. I said, I'm going to get drafted anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody knew they was going to get drafted, so I went ahead and joined. Mm-hmm. And went down to Wichita Falls, Texas.
There. Was that for your basic training?
Basic training. We marched around just like regular infantrymen for quite a while, you know, and everything there. And then I was training on the airplane, the engines and stuff. And I says, Jiminy Christmas, I don't want to be a mechanic here on the ground. And so that's when I signed up to be an aerial gunner.
Okay.
And they sent me to Tyndall Field, Florida. There we were shooting the guns out of the old planes and stuff, you know. And then I come to Topeka and they assigned me to this crew. And like I say, that he was a heck of a good pilot. Mm-hmm. I never got a scratch all the time I was in the World War. I never got a scratch.
Okay. When you joined, did your parents approve of you joining? What did they think?
Oh, well, yeah, I guess so. They they said it's all right there. All of us boys wind up. I had my myself and my four brothers, and my sister, and we all wound up in the service.
In all different branches?
Yes, yes, yes. I have a brother that just died here lately, Ronald, and he, well, I don't know what he was drafted or what, but anyway, he wound up as an infantryman, and he had it rough over there in China, France and Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I tell me stories about him, about it there. And then, of course, Wayne had ear trouble, and he never got out of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And
what service was he in?
He was an Air Force mechanic.
Okay.
Airplane mechanic.
All right.
And then my younger brother, Clayton, he was in the infantry, and he was over in south of Mindanao over there fighting the Japanese there, where I was over there. Of course, he was in Mindanao. I was still over in China.
Okay.
But I never met any of my brothers during the war.
Mm-hmm.
They was all in separate places there.
But they all came home from the war.
Everybody. I remember my dad during the World War there, he was walking up to the American Legion there, and his good buddy there, they was talking, and his buddy, says, Burke, he says, you've got four boys in the war over there. He says, you're going to lose one of them for sure. My dad says, I'm afraid so. He says, I'm afraid so. He lost his only son.
Oh, dear.
Mm-hmm. Is that the way it goes?
Isn't that ironic?
Isn't that ironic? All four of us come home, from the war.
Now, your sister, she didn't join?
No. She was too young.
Okay.
And, of course, my brother, Dwight, he went in the Coast Guard. He was a Coast Guard. He's in the Coast Guard for several years there.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's in Tennessee there. But all of us boys all come home.
Okay.
All of us did.
And I bet you had stories to trade.
Oh, yeah.
Well, maybe we'll get to some of those.
Okay.
When you went to basic training, was that the first time that you had been away from home for a long period of time?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was 19 there.
And could you describe maybe like the food or, the living conditions?
Oh, that's good, man. Alive. I got down there I weighed 135 pounds when I got in the service, and gee whiz, after I'd eaten that army, everybody's talking about how terrible the food was. I thought it was great.
Mm-hmm.
And so after a year of eating that army chow, I weighed 165 pounds.
Wow.
Man, I was, everybody's talking about, of course, when I was growing up, we was dirt poor.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. And my mom and put a pot full of beans on the table, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just lucky to have enough food on the table.
Okay.
And so.
Did you find it difficult to follow orders, to take orders?
Oh, no, not necessarily there. In the Air Force, you didn't really get a lot of orders like you did in the infantry,
Mm-hmm.
And no, I didn't really find it too hard to take orders there. I knew what I was supposed to be doing anyhow there.
Mm-hmm.
My pilot, he never give anybody orders, He just says, we're going.
Okay. When you were training to be a gunner, could you maybe be more specific what that meant? I mean, I guess you were, aiming the gun?
Oh, yeah. I flew waste gunner. Why, you stick that old gun out and raise your window up in the 24 Liberator. And raise that window up, stick your gun out, and ready to shoot, Of course, I was back there, and of course, we went to China, and that was strange, because we was up there at Topeka, and they was getting all these brand new bombers were sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
All these brand new B-24 bombers were sitting there. But my pilot and 10 other pilots, 9 other crews, they got together and decided they didn't want to go to England. And, of course, that would probably save my life.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I think the good Lord's been looking after me for a long time there. And anyway, so we all got on a troop train, and the 10 crews, head down to Miami, flew all the way across Africa, India, flew the hump over to China, and we got over there and didn't have a plane to fly.
Oh, no.
So we had to wait about 15 days there, and if I had my billfold, I'd show you my plane here. Find my billfold here.
Okay. Okay, so this is a photograph of...
That's not it. That's a flood in Cimarron there.
Oh, okay. Well, that's an interesting...
65. That's when they flooded everything in Cimarron.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. Let's see, we got some more. Got a lot of stuff here I've got to find. Oh, man. If I didn't need to find this, I could find it.
Well, then
it really
you could find it right away.
I could find it all.
Yeah.
Where's my pictures at here? Mom, what'd you do with my pictures?
Now, don't blame it on her.
Oh, I blame everything on her. She's used to that. I'm telling you what.
Well, if you find them later, I might need to come back, too, and talk with you longer.
Well, I got some pictures here of our old bomber here somewhere.
Okay.
Old 375.
Is that it?
Well, that's my... I don't know what happened here.
Maybe you showed it to someone. And
I don't know what.
Okay, well, don't worry about it.
Okay.
If you find it,
right.
I'll be back in town, so that will work.
I'll find it here.
Okay, you were describing the training. So tell me, on most planes, there were three gunners?
No. There's six of them.
Six, okay.
On the liberators.
Okay, can you give, you call it a top gunner?
That's the top turret gunner there. I flew that sometimes. Lopez, we had the... Mama, where's the picture of our crew? I got a picture of our crew and everything around here in the box somewhere.
We can get that later.
Okay, all right. Well, anyway, I flew three positions on the bomber. I flew the nose turret.
Okay.
And the top turret. And the waist gunner.
Now that's WASTE, waist?
Waist, yeah, WAIST, waist.
Oh, waist, okay.
Waist, like you can fly in the waist.
Right.
And that's where you stick your gun out the side there.
Okay.
And I had quite a few stories to tell about that.
Okay.
Can I tell you one?
Yeah, just give me the three other gunners.
Okay, well, I never got to ever got to fly the tail turret because McCabe was always back there.
Okay.
And then... Shinnis was supposed to be the ball turret gunner, but I took his place sometime in the ball turret. You couldn't hit nothing there.
Okay, and then what was the next one?
Well, top turret, two waist gunners.
Oh, two waist gunners.
Yeah, well, each side, you know.
Okay.
Flying out each side. Mm-hmm. Rover Camper always wanted the right one.
Mm-hmm.
He was an armor gunner. He always wanted the right gun. So I had to take a left gun back there, you know.
Okay. All right, now tell your stories about being a gunner.
Oh, well, I tell you, of course, we went to China, you know, there. And we were flying over to China there. And I stick my gun out there, you know, and this old Zero was coming by me. And, boy, I was getting ready to shoot him. And, boy, and here was a doggone P-40. Chinese flew the P-40s.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting right on his tail. Pumping him full of lead, and that poor Jap guy was trying to get out of that burning Zero.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, get out of there, you know. And so he bailed out. I could see him bail out. But the Japanese didn't have parachutes. If they had a parachute, they had to get it themselves. Because the Japanese considered the plane more powerful, more important than the parachute.
Mm-hmm.
And I seen him. I said, oh no, parachute opened just like a cord. I seen him going into this lake, 20,000 feet.
Oh, dear.
Oh, man. You couldn't help but feel sorry for even though your enemy, you know, you're shooting at him and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But he went into this lake, 20,000 feet. I see this place. Oh, man. That's terrible. We shot down those Zeros. We shot them down right and left there. Because I still remember this time that we was flying this one mission, and I didn't know what was going to happen until I found out later on that they would tip the Japanese off that we were going to bomb Hankow, Nanking, or that bomb around there, you know, warehouses. And I was flying waist gunner, and we was pulling out over this lake, and I was just leaning over there looking things over. First thing I see a flashing going on way up above me. What's going on way up there? And pretty soon here come these Zeros down. And what we'd done is that brought 15 brand new P-51 Mustangs into this field the day before. Mm-hmm. And they'd climb to 30,000 feet up there. We didn't even know what was up there. And here was the Japanese about 20-some thousand feet, the Zeros. Mm-hmm. And then Zeros were going to drop down on us mm-hmm. as we were getting ready to bomb, you know. Mm-hmm. Instead of that, the P-51 dropped down on them. Mm-hmm. And I remember looking out. And I could see them going round and round and round and round. I said, what the heck's going on up there? Mm-hmm. And here they come down. Here the Zeros come down, and pretty soon, boy, we knocked down something like 20-some Zeros that day, and we lost one P-40.
Good.
Well, the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. They beat us, but boy, every other time, we beat the heck mm-hmm. out of them.
Where was your base?
Well, outside of Kunming, that was, of course, to just fly the hump, you know, we mm-hmm. call the hump.
Right, over the Himalayas.
Himalayan mountains, and the land there, and we was all based right around there, you know, there.
Okay. And were these bases built by the Americans?
Chinese, manual labor. Okay. Manual labor. This would be 100 Chinamen pulling one of these rollers up and down the fair, up and down the runway,
okay.
building all the big lead bases. Of course, the runways weren't the greatest.
Right.
But like I say, my pilot was good. We could take off and we saw planes. We never lost a bomber to the Japanese. Mm-hmm. But boy, we had turnover there. There's guys that couldn't lost and have to crash in the mountains stuff around there. Almost 100% turnover of B-24s because they was getting lost, but our pilot, like I say, was a real good one.
Now, were you with the same pilot and the same crew?
All the time.
Is that unusual?
Well, no, not necessarily. Okay. That's the way you assigned your pilot, uh-huh. your crew. Okay. And, boy, I had a real good crew. But like I say, that we went to China to fight. I really kind of got a guess, because every one of these pilots, Bowman was a pilot, Miller was our co-pilot, Henning was a navigator, and Braun was a bombardier.
Okay.
All German boys.
Oh.
They didn't want to go fight Germany.
Right.
I figured after a while, I wondered about that, you know, but they was all German boys, mm-hmm. and they was good.
What is a bombardier?
He's the guy that pushed that old button and dropped those bombs.
Okay.
He got over there, and he had his old bomb slot there, and coming over the deal, and when the old crosshairs come across, well, boom, all the bombs went.
So how many bombs did the plane carry?
It depended. Okay. It depended on whether you had a long mission, you had to have your bomb bay tanks, and they took about half the bomb bay, so you just cut your bomb bay in half, you cut bomb load in half, mm-hmm. because we always seemed like we always carried 500-pound bombs, RDX bombs, they call. You didn't need
RDX?
RDX. Okay. I don't know what I got, but anyway, shoot, you didn't even need a fuse on those things. They would have hit, they was going to go off.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a lot of experiences there, but I still remember this, Colonel Crockett. He was an Eager Beaver West Pointer. He was our colonel. And he was going to really be, and he'd heard where there was a Japanese carrier and a cruiser that was hiding down in Indochina at that time, you know. And so he sent 7 of us bombers down there. And we come flying out over the coast there. And I was flying top turret that day. And I started to go down and I said, look there, there's a Zero coming around behind us there, you know. He wasn't a Zero. He's an F-6F, U.S. Navy plane. I told the pilot, I said, that looks like a Navy plane. My pilot said, it sure is. You look over our left side, and here we was. Of course, all the planes that were up on deck at that time had to take off. Mm-hmm. Every plane was on deck, you had to take off. And there was something like 350 planes up there for us 7 planes.
Oh.
We would run smack dab into Michener's Task Force 58.
Mm-hmm.
Because we didn't know it at that time, you know. And boy, we was waving white hanks, even the little pilot. I still remember one F-6F pilot sitting right off our wing, looking at us, see if we had slant eyes or something, you know. And We were waving white flags to get out of there.
There was no radio communication?
No. They had their band and we had ours. We couldn't talk to them.
But could you communicate with your pilot?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Sure, the intercom.
Okay.
Sure, you could just press a button. You always had this deal wrapped around your neck, you know, and it just told you that you could talk to the pilot anytime. Any member of the crew, you could talk to them.
Okay.
They just broadcast over the crew, you know.
Did you fly a mission every day, or?
No, we had to wait. I felt sorry for these transport pilots flying these C-47s and C-64s, C-36s. They had to fly barrels of gasoline over from India over to China in 50-gallon drums there. Mm-hmm. And the Chinese would load those up into the truck and come and fill our tanks up, you know.
Okay.
Gee, with some of those Liberators carried 2,700 gallons of regular gas when they were at the wing tanks.
Mm-hmm.
That's beside the bomb bay tank.
Yeah.
So, boy, I tell you what, we had to sit around for several days because we didn't mind it.
Well, no.
We were just having fun over there.
So, the United States brought the gas to India.
Yeah.
And then the planes picked it up and took it over the...
Over the hump.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. Okay, what did you do when you weren't flying a mission? Just pass time?
Oh, pass time, writing letters, any old thing, you know, there. Mm-hmm. We just take it easy. And, of course, we spend a lot of time in the mess hall over there. And then they cook up our scrambled eggs. Chinese eggs, that big. Can you imagine how many you can eat? And we sat over there and write letters and stuff. And then, of course, they laugh funny. I didn't have American food, sardines, enchilada, canned potted meat. Oh man, we'd love to have all that. I'm getting tired of eating that water buffalo steak.
Mm-hmm.
And of course the Chinese are supposed to feed us, see?
Mm-hmm.
And so my dad, he says, the mom says, you trying to send food all the way over here for him and you're trying to feed him from here? I got home and I said, Dad, she did.
So you were able to write home
to
your parents and then you received mail while you were over there.
Yeah, it didn't cost you a thing to mail letter.
Okay.
Yeah, all you had to do is stamp deal on there, you know. And the servicemen all over the world could mail letters free of charge mm-hmm. during World War II, you know.
Now, were you able to know what your brothers, where they were, what they were
doing? Well, Mom would tell me, yeah. Mom would always tell me, yeah.
Okay.
She kept me in track of where everybody was, you
mm-hmm.
know. And like I said, that it was amazing that we all got home. See, Ronald was in France. Clayton was in Mindanao. And, of course, I was in China. And, of course, Wayne never got overseas.
Mm-hmm.
But then Dwight, of course, he was in the Coast Guard.
Mm-hmm.
And Minoma, my youngest sister, there, she had 12 kids.
Oh, my. That's a lot. She was busy.
Oh, they're all as healthy as all get out there.
How long were you in China? Was that the only place you were during the war?
No, that was where I did all the fighting, you know,
mm-hmm.
there. I come back. And, of course, I couldn't get out. Nobody got out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so they assigned me to go to Liberal down here.
Now, when did you come back?
And what was it? I was in the air coming home the day that they announced that President Roosevelt died.
Oh, in April of 45.
Yeah, that's right. I was in the air flying. And, of course, I got back to Kunming there. And... they announced that there was a plane leaving for India in a few minutes. Man, I said, I'm going to get on it. Lined up in the middle of the plane. And I said, what in the world? It was the Chinese shipping all their gold and silver to India. In case, you know, of course, That's Chiang Kai-shek, you know, because he figured the doggone communists were coming. He was trying to ship all of his gold to India. And so there was all this silver out there and on this bars out there in the middle of the plain. And there's a pilot was flying a hump. Course, I'd been always flying in the war, and I didn't want to. Man, I want to get home. And anyway, I looked out there, and I says, "Gee, many Christmas."